In the centre of the citadel, behind the temple, was a walled garden. Vorbis was there, surrounded by bishops and iambs.
"Ah, my desert companion," he said as Baratha approached. "My brothers, I should like you to know that I have it in my mind to raise our Baratha to archbishophood."
There was a very faint murmur of astonishment from the clerics.
"And now you will all leave, but Archbishop Baratha will remain. We wish to talk."
The clergy withdrew. Vorbis sat on a stone chair under an elder tree and gave Baratha a long, slow stare.
"You are recovered?"
"Yes, Lord."
There was a long silence. Overhead, an eagle circled.
"I am sure you have confused memories of our wanderings in the wilderness."
"No. My memory does not confuse readily. Numrod said you led me through the desert."
"Remember what I said about fundamental truth, Baratha? Om guided my steps. My God led me and I led you."
"I see."
Overhead, the eagle appeared to hang motionless in the air for a moment. Then it folded its wings and fell.
"Much was given to me in the desert, Baratha. Now I must tell the world. That is the duty of a prophet."
It sometimes took a long time for an idea to form in Baratha's mind, but one was forming now. It was something about the way Vorbis was sitting, the edge in his voice.
Vorbis was afraid of him.
Somewhere out on the hillsides, the eagle swooped, picked something up, and strove for height.
"I have something to show you that may amuse you," Vorbis said, standing up.
Steps led from the garden to the maze of underground tunnels and rooms that underlay the temple. Baratha followed Vorbis to the artificer's quarters, where workshops glowed red with the light of the forge fires. Several workers were clustered around something wide and curved.
"There. What do you think?"
It was a turtle. The iron founders had done a pretty good job, even down to the patterning on the shell and the scales on the legs. It was about 8 feet long.
"They think they live on the back of a great turtle, do they not? Well, let them die on one."
Now Baratha could see the shackles attached to each iron leg. He bent down. Yes, there was the firebox underneath. That much iron would take ages to heat up to the point of pain. Some aspects of quisition thinking never changed. And he would forge a book of Vorbis, and Baratha knew what the commandments would be, holy wars and blood and crusades and blood and piety and blood. Some spotty boy was hoeing the vegetable garden. He looked in amazement when Baratha took the hoe.
"You aren't doing it right. Go and do something else."
Baratha jabbed viciously at the weeds around the seedlings. Only a few weeks and already there was a haze of green on the soil. He worked his way along to the end of the row, then he tidied up the bean vines. Lutze watched carefully from his little shed by the soil heaps. It was another barn. Ern was seeing a lot of barns. They'd started with a cart and the gearing had been a problem.
"I can't get it to go backwards," he said.
"Don't worry," said Simony. "It won't have to go backwards. What about armour?"
"This thing is 20 feet long. I've tried nailing iron plates on a framework, but it just collapses under the weight."
Simony looked at the skeleton of the steam car.
"Ever been in a battle?"
"No, I've got flat feet."
"Do you know what a tortoise is?"
"OK, the answer isn't a reptile in a shell, is it?"
"I mean a shield tortoise.
When you're attacking a fortress and the enemy is dropping everything he's got on you, every man holds his shield overhead so that it kind of slots into all the shields around it. Can take a lot of weight.
Overlapping.
Like scales."
Ern looked reflectively at the cart.
"And the battering ram?"
"Oh, that's no problem. Tree trunk bolted to the frame. Excuse me, sirs." A burly man stepped forward.
"Yes, Sergeant Fergman. The bronze doors is reinforced with Latchian steel and they opens outwards only. If you push on them, they only locks more firmly together."
"How they opened then?" said Ern.
"The Cenobiarch raises his hand and the breath of God blows them open."
"In a logical sense, I meant."
"Oh, well, one of the deacons goes behind a curtain and pulls a lever, but
When I was a guard down in the crypts, sometimes you could hear water gushing.
Hydraulics.
Can you get in? Said Simony. To the room?
Why not?
Could Fergman make these hydraulics work? Ern was rubbing his chin reflectively with a hammer.
Shouldn't think so.
Could you?
Probably.
Ern was still staring thoughtfully at the steam cart. How soon can you have it all finished?
Late tomorrow night. If we work through tonight,
we'll need it for the next dawn. We won't have time to see if it works.
It'll work first time.
Really?
I built it. It'll work first time.
Good. Ern was left alone in the barn.
Just don't ask me about the second or third time, he said quietly to himself.
Vorbis sat in the stone chair in his garden.
There will be a disturbance during the ceremony tomorrow.
Lord,
said one of the head inquisitors.
I have special knowledge.
Of course, Lord. You know the breaking strain of sinews and muscles, Deacon Cusp?
Yes, Lord. I know the breaking strain of people.
It was night. Lutze crept through the gloom of the barn, sweeping industriously. Then he took a rag from the recesses of his robe and polished the outside of the moving turtle, which loomed low and menacing in the shadows, and he swept his way towards the forge. Ern, who was almost asleep on his feet, grunted as something was put in his hands. It was a cup of tea.
Oh, thank you.
Nod, smile.
Nearly done. Just got to let it cool now. Really slowly. Otherwise, it crystallises, you see.
Nod, smile, nod. It was good tea.
It's not an important cast anyway, said Ern, swaying. Just the control levers.
Lutze caught him carefully and steered him to a seat on a heap of charcoal. Then he went and watched the forge for a while. The bar of steel was glowing in the mould. He poured a bucket of cold water over it, put his broom over his shoulder, and ran away. People would have been surprised at his turn of speed, especially in a man 6,000 years old who ate nothing but brown rice and drank only green tea with a knob of rancid butter in it.
"You call this philosophy?"
roared Didactylus. His stick wanged down on the moving turtle's flanks.
"Philosophy is supposed to make life better."
This will make it better. It'll help overthrow a tyrant.
And then?
And then what?
And then you'll smash it up, burn the plans, yes?
Well, aha. What if we do keep it? It'll be a deterrent to other tyrants.
You think tyrants won't build them too?
Well, I can build bigger ones.
Didactylus sagged.
Yes. So, that's all right then.
He looked hunched up and suddenly old. The great god Om slid down the side of an irrigation ditch. He estimated that he was doing less than a fifth of a mile an hour, and the citadel was at least 20 miles away. And then there was nightfall. He'd slow down at night as his blood cooled. He was losing heat already. Heat meant speed. He saw the eagle forever circling. He pulled himself up onto an anthill.
You're going to die. You're going to die.
Preparations for the inauguration of the Cenobi Arc Prophet began many hours before the dawn. Firstly, there was a very careful search of the temple. Although it was against the thread, Deacon Cusp had his head screwed on. He knew what a well-placed arrow would do to an unexpecting stomach. Someone tapped him on the ribcage. He reached instinctively for his dagger.
Oh.
Lutze indicated with his broom that Deacon Cusp was standing on a patch of floor that he wished to sweep.
Hello, you ghastly little yellow fool.
Nod, smile.
Idiot.
Smile, smile, watch. Ern stood back.
Tell me again.
We stoke up the firebox, said Simony. When the red needle points to XXV1, turn the brass tap. When the bronze whistle blows, pull the big lever and steer by pulling the ropes.
They'd had time to put a few finishing touches to the moving turtle. There were serrated edges to the shell and spikes on the wheels.
Right, said Ern. Give us an hour, then.
You should get to the temple by the time we get the doors open.
Baratha wandered through the deserted corridors of the novices' section. There were dozens of ceremonies to be undertaken before the new Cenobi Ark was crowned. He never felt more alone. The wilderness had been a feast of fun compared to this. Life was so much simpler in the desert. He wandered out into the outside world and stared gloomily at the ground. If Om was alive, surely he could send a sign. And then he thought, Om's gone, and soon the world will end. I might as well watch it happen. Sandals flapping, Baratha set off towards the place.
You god-awful idiot! Don't go that way!
The sun was well up now, a golden ball in a flaming orange sky. Om pulled himself up another slope and stared blearily at the distant citadel. In his mind's eye, he could hear the mocking voices of all small gods. They didn't like a god who had failed. It reminded them of mortality. He'd be thrust out into the deep desert until the end of the world. Erne and Fergman walked nonchalantly through the tunnels of the citadel. The only people around were those with vital jobs to do. Fergman turned a corner and stopped by a large grill which stretched from floor to ceiling. It was very rusty. Erne peered through the bars. Beyond, in the gloom, there were pipes.
Eureka! Going for a bath, then? Said Fergman.
Just keep watch. Erne selected a short crowbar from his belt and inserted it between the grill and the stonework. The grill popped out with a leaden sound. He stepped inside the long, dark, damp room and gave a whistle of admiration. He looked up at iron buckets bigger than he was and a tangle of man-sized pipes. This was the breath of God. Probably the last man who knew how it worked had been tortured to death years before. Killing the creator was a traditional method of patent protection. There were the levers, and there, hanging over pits in the rock floor, were the two sets of counterweights. Probably it'd only take a few hundred gallons of water to swing the balance either way.
Simple principle, said Erne. No gods are involved in any way. Water pours into the reservoirs, disturbing the equilibrium. One lot of weight descends, and the other rises up. The weight at the door is immaterial.
He caught Fergman's expression.
Water goes in and out, and the doors swing open. What did Simony say the sign would be?
They'll blow a trumpet when they're through the main gate.
Right.
Erne eyed the weights and the reservoirs overhead. The bronze pipes dripped with corrosion.
Just give me a leg up, will you? It'll take time to unhook the linkage to the valve.
Erne heaved himself into the ancient machinery, while above, in the temple, the ceremony droned on. There never was a book of the prophet Baratha, but an enterprising scribe, during what came to be called the renovation, did assemble some notes. This was the testament of Cut Me Own Hand Off Diabla.
One, I was standing right by the statue of Osiri Wright when I noticed Baratha just beside me. Two, I said to him, hello, your graciousness, and offered him a yoghurt practically free. Three, he responded no. Four, I said, it's a live yoghurt. Five, he said, yes, he could see. Six, right, I admit it was more alive than usual. I mean, I had to keep hitting it with a spoon to stop it getting out of the... All right. He was staring at the doors. This was about the time of the third gong. Seven, he just stood there staring. So I said, got a problem, your reverence? Upon which he vouchsafed, I cannot hear him. I said, what is this he to whom what you refer? He said, if he was here, he would send me a sign. Eight, anyway, then he pushed through the line of guards and stood right in front of the doors. I heard him say, I carried you in the desert. I believed all my life. Just give me this one thing. Nine, something like that, anyway.
Baratha's mind was flaming like a beacon in Om's senses.
It's too soon, he yelled. You need followers. You can't do it by yourself.
Simony turned to look down the length of the turtle. 30 men were crouched under the shell. The brass whistle whistled. Simony picked up the steering ropes.
Stand by!
He pulled the big lever hard. The brittle metal snapped in his hand. In the depths of the temple's hidden plumbing, Erne grasped a bronze pipe firmly with his spanner and gave the nut a cautious turn. It resisted. He used more pressure. With a sad little metal sound, the pipe twisted and broke. Water gushed out, hitting him in the face. He tried to block the flow with his fingers, but it spurted around his hands and gurgled down a channel towards one of the weights.
"Stop it! Stop it!" he shouted.
"What?" said Fergmen.
"Stop the water!"
"How?" "Both of you, stand still."
There was a heavy-set man in a black robe standing in the doorway. Behind him a guard held a sword in a meaningful manner.
"Who are you? Why are you here?"
Erne gestured with his spanner.
"Well, it's the seating, isn't it?" he said. "You got shocking seepage around the seating."
Deacon Cusp stepped into the room. He glared uncertainly at Erne.
"But you're not..."
He spun around as Fergmen hit the guard hard with a length of broken pipe. When he turned back, Erne's spanner caught him full in the stomach. He doubled up, sagged backwards, and grabbed at one of the weights for support. It sank down, ponderously. He clawed higher. It sank further, dropping below the lip of the pit. Erne saw his face staring up at him as the weight fell into the gloom. Above them, linkage clanked into action. There was a distant creaking of bronze against bronze. And blows rained down on the unmoving, moving turtle's carapace.
"Damn, damn, damn!" shouted Simony. "Move! I command you to move!"
The unmoving machine leaked steam and sat there. And Om pulled himself up the slope of a small hill. So it came to this, then. There was only one way to get there now. It was a million-to-one chance. And Baratha stood in front of the huge doors. Just a sign, he thought, in the loneliness of his head. The doors trembled and swung slowly outwards. Baratha stepped forward. The thousands inside the temple were looking around in confusion. The choirs of lesser Iams paused in their chant. Baratha walked on up the aisle. Vorbis was standing in the centre of the temple, under the vault of the dome. Guards hurried towards Baratha, but Vorbis raised a hand in a gentle but very positive movement which filled the temple with silence.
"Ah, my Baratha, we looked for you in vain."
Baratha stopped a few feet away. The part of him still capable of thought was thinking, "There is nothing you can say. It doesn't matter what you tell people about Ephebi and Brother Murdoch and the desert. No one will care. It won't be fundamentally true." The black-on-black eyes filled the world like two pits.
"There is something you wish to say?"
Baratha's mind gave up, and Baratha's body took over. It brought his hand back and raised it. He saw Vorbis turn his cheek and smile. Baratha lowered his hand.
"No, I won't."
As the hands of the guards closed on him, Vorbis stepped forward, patted him on the shoulder.
"Thrash him within an inch of his life and burn him the rest of the way. Do it now."
A world of silence. No sound except the rush of wind through feathers as the eagle drops like an arrow, the world spinning around the little moving shape that is the focus of all the eagle's attention. Closer and talons down, grip and rise. Baratha opened his eyes. He was spread-eagled on a surface, his arms and legs chained, sky above. The towering frontage of the temple to one side. By turning his head a little, he could see the silent crowd and the brown metal of the iron turtle. He could smell smoke. The world spun under Om as the eagle sought for shell-cracking height.
"Careful, careful, concentrate. It'll let go any second."
Om stared at the body just above him, picked what he hoped was the right spot, plunged his beak through the brown feathers, and gripped. The eagle blinked. No tortoise had ever done that to an eagle. Om's thoughts arrived in the little silvery world of its mind.
"We don't want to hurt one another, now do we?"
The eagle's eyes watered.
"Now, this is what I want you to do."
Erne pushed his way through the crowd, with Fergmen trailing behind. The crowd was silent and very attentive. He craned forward to see, and then looked up at the soldier beside him. It was Simony.
"I thought..."
It didn't work, but that doesn't matter now. The flat tones of his voice made Urn follow the eyes of the crowd. There was another iron turtle there, and chained to the back.
Who's that?
Baratha.
What, alive? Come on, then!
Come on what?
We can rush the steps and save him!
Simony grabbed his arm. Think logically, would you? Look at the crowd.
Well?
They don't like it. We can make Baratha's death a symbol for people.
A symbol?
Urn stared at the distant figure of Baratha. It was naked except for a loincloth.
Now I know Vorbis is evil, he said, turning to Simony. He turns other people into copies of himself.
Simony's grip was like a vice. You're saying I'm like him?
You're thinking like him? So we rush them, then. He dies anyway and we die too. What difference does that make?
Urn's face was grey.
You mean you don't know? You don't know?
The sky was blue. Baratha turned his head again towards the sun. It was eclipsed by the head of Vorbis.
Hot yet, Baratha?
Warm.
It will get warmer. You are going to burn for treachery and heresy.
There will be justice. If there is no justice, there is nothing. Baratha was aware of a small voice in his head, too faint yet to distinguish words.
Justice! The idea seemed to enrage Vorbis. This is justice. Om has judged through me!
There was a speck in the sun now, speeding towards the citadel. The little voice was saying,
left, 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 up, right, right a bit.
The mass of metal under Baratha was getting uncomfortably hot. He comes now, he said.
Om comes, let him come. Let him judge between us. Left now. One, two, three.
Vorbis.
What? You are going to die.
It was hardly a whisper, but it carried across the place. The eagles sped across the square so low that people ducked. Then it cleared the roof of the temple and curved away towards the mountains. The watchers relaxed. No one saw the tiny speck tumbling from the sky. Vorbis extended his arms and smiled beatifically at the sky. There was just time for his expression to change before 2 pounds of tortoise, travelling at 3 metres a second, hit him between the eyes. Baratha was aware of feet running up the steps, and then a voice.
One, he is mine.
The great god rose over the temple, billowing and changing as the belief of thousands of people flowed into him. There were shapes of eagle-headed men and bulls and golden horns. 4 bolts of fire whirred out of the cloud and burst the chains holding Baratha.
2, he is Cenobiarch and Prophet of Prophets.
The cloud had by now condensed into a shimmering golden figure as tall as the temple. It leant down until its face was a few feet away from Baratha, and in a whisper that boomed across the place said,
3, you and me, kid, this is just the start. People are going to find out what wailing and gnashing of teeth really is.
Another shaft of flame shot out and struck the temple doors. They slammed shut, and then the white-hot bronze melted, erasing the commandments of the centuries.
4, what shall it be, prophet?
Baratha stood up unsteadily. Urn supported him by one arm and Simony by the other.
5, your commandments.
I don't know if I can think of any, said Baratha. The world waited.
Not killing people. We could do with one like that, said someone from the crowd. It'd be a good start, said Urn.
They looked at the chosen one.
No, not really.
They stared at him.
Come on, said Simony. What's wrong with it?
It's hard to explain, but I think you should do things because they're right, not because God say so.
6,
I like one about not killing. 7. Hurry up. I've got some smiting to do.
No. No smiting. No commandments unless you obey them too. Om thumped on the roof of the temple.
8. You order me. Me?
No. I ask.
9. I do not need you. I have believers enough now.
But only through me, and perhaps not for long. It's happened before, that's why gods die. They never believe in people, but you have a chance. All you need to do is believe. It could be a bargain.
10. Bargain? I don't bargain, not with humans.
Bargain now while you have the chance. Om paused, then he said, 11.
You want a constitutional religion?
Why not? The other sort didn't work. Om leant on the temple.
Chapter 2, verse 1. Very well, then, but only for a time.
A grin spread across the enormous smoking face.
For 100 years.
And after 100 years?
2. We shall see.
Agreed. A finger the length of a tree descended, touched Baratha.
3. You have a persuasive way. You will need it. A fleet approaches.
Ephebians? Said Simony.
4. And Sortians, and the Jellybabians, and Latians, every free country along the coast, to stamp out Omnia for good.
Simony looked up at the god. Will you help?
No help, said Baratha firmly.
What? We'll need a mighty army against that lot. And we haven't got one, so we'll do it another way. Baratha's calmness was like a desert. He looked up at Om. You will not show yourself like this again?
Chapter 3, verse 1. No, once is enough.
Remember the desert?
2. I will remember.
Walk with me. Baratha went over to the body of Vorbis and picked it up. He walked down the steps. Urn and Simony watched him go. He's going to die, said Simony. He turned to Om.
Can you stop him?
3. It may be that I cannot.
Well, we're not deserting him.
4. Good.
Om watched them go too.
Excuse me.
5. Yes. 6. What is your name?
Deibla, God.
7. Ah, yes.
You couldn't manage just a small commandment, something about eating yogurt on Wednesday, say? It's always difficult to shift midweek.
8. You stand before your God and look for business opportunities.
Well, strike while the iron is hot, as the Inquisitors say. Ha ha! We could come to an arrangement. 20%? How about it?
The great god Om smiled.
9. I think you will make a little profit, Deibla.
Right. That's all I'm looking for. Just trying to make both ends humus.
10. Tortoises are to be left alone.
The shade of Vorbis looked around. The black sand was absolutely still under the starlit sky. It looked cold. Ah, the desert. There was a hint of uncertainty. The feeling was unfamiliar and terrifying. He got a grip on himself. And at the end of the desert?
Judgment.
Of course. Vorbis tried to concentrate. He couldn't. He could feel certainty draining away, and he'd always been certain. He hesitated. He had to cross the desert. What could there be to fear? The desert was what you believed. Vorbis looked inside himself and went on looking.
He sagged to his knees. Death snapped his fingers and a large white horse trotted up.
Don't leave me. It's so empty.
Death gathered up the reins.
You have perhaps heard the phrase that hell is other people.
Yes.
In time, you will learn that it is wrong.
The first boats grounded in the shallows, and the troops leapt into shoulder-high surf. General Argovisti of Ephebi scanned the beach.
They must have seen us coming, so why would they let us establish a beachhead?
Heat haze wavered over the dunes. A dot appeared, growing and contracting in the shimmering air. General Argovisti shaded his eyes. The figure stopped at the foot of the dunes.
Fellas is just standing there. He's carrying something. Sergeant, take a couple of men and bring him here.
Baratha was brought before a trestle table, behind which sat half a dozen large men in various military styles. He dropped Vorbis's body onto the sand.
I know him, said Bavorius of Tsort.
Vorbis. Someone killed him at last, eh? Who sent you, boy?
Said Argovisti. No one. You could say, I come from the future.
Are you a philosopher? Where's your sponge?
You've come to wage war on Omnia. This would not be a good idea.
From Omnia's point of view, yes.
From everyone's. You will probably defeat us, but not all of us. And there'll be another war, and one day people will say, why didn't they sort it all out before it started, on the beach? Now we have that chance. Argovisti stared at him.
Are you talking about surrender?
If that's the word.
You can't do that!
Someone will have to. Listen, Vorbis is dead. He's paid.
We were not sent here to parley, said Bavorius abruptly. Vorbis's death changes nothing fundamental. We are here to see that Omnia is no longer a threat.
It is not. We will rebuild Ephebi. We will reduce our army, consider us beaten. We will even open Omnia to whatever religions wish to build holy places here. A voice echoed in his head.
One. What?
Two.
Other gods?
Will you please excuse me a moment? Said Baratha brightly.
I need to pray.
He walked off a little way up the beach.
Yes?
Three. Other gods in Omnia?
Ah, but it'll work for you. People will soon see that those other ones are no good.
Four. You shall not subject your god to market forces.
I'm sorry. I can see that you... His eye was caught by a movement among the dunes.
Oh, no, the idiots!
He turned and ran desperately towards the beached fleet.
No, listen, listen!
But they had seen the army too. It looked impressive, perhaps more impressive than it really was. In the lead, the iron cart. Steam poured out of its funnel.
Stupid, stupid!
Baratha shouted to the world in general. The fleet was already forming battle lines, and Bavorius caught him as he plunged towards a line of spears.
I see. Keep us talking while your soldiers get into position, eh?
No! I didn't want that!
Bavorius's eyes narrowed.
No, but it doesn't matter. Fight first, talk after. That's how it works, boy. That's history. Now go back.
The Omnians were assembling among the dunes. A lot of them had clustered around the iron-shielded cart.
Didn't I say I'd go down there alone?
Baratha said. Simony gave him a grim smile. Did it work? There was a clanging noise, and a hatch opened on the side of the turtle. Urn emerged backwards, holding a spanner.
What is this thing?
Said Baratha.
It's a machine for fighting, said Simony.
The turtle moves, eh? Baratha looked at the spiked wheels.
It's a device that goes by itself, said Erne.
What comes out of the big long spout thing at the front?
Steam.
Oh.
Very hot.
Huh?
Scalding, in fact.
Baratha's gaze drifted from the steam funnel to the rotating knives. Very philosophical. Simony broke the silence by patting Baratha on the shoulder.
We won't lose, he said. We have God on our side.
Baratha turned. His fist shot out. Simony clutched his chin.
What was that for?
we get the gods we deserve, and we don't deserve any. The sanest man I've met this year lives up a pole in the desert. I think I ought to join him.
One. Why?
Gods and men. Men and gods. Stupid.
Two. But you are the chosen one.
Choose someone else. Baratha strode off through the ragged army. No one tried to stop him. Something like a golden comet sped across the sky of the Discworld. Om soared like an eagle, buoyed up by the strength of belief. Belief this hot never lasted long. Human minds could not sustain it. But while it did last, he was strong. The central spire of Cori Celesti rises up from the mountains at the hub, 10 vertical miles of green ice and snow, topped by the turrets and domes of Dun Manifestin. There the gods of the Discworld live. There was a double door at the end of the main hall. It burst inward, and Om strode through the debris.
Right, he said.
Io, god of thunder, looked up from his throne and waved his hammer threateningly.
Who are you?
Om strode towards the throne, picked up Io by his toga, and gave a quick jab with his forehead.
Oh, you didn't have to do that.
Listen, friend, I've got no time for talking to some panty waster in a sheet. Where's the gods of Ephebi and Sort?
Io, clutching at his nose, waved vaguely towards the centre of the hall. In the middle of the room was what at first looked like a round table, and then looked like a model of the Discworld, and then in some undefinable way looked like the real Discworld, both a map and the place mapped. The gods clustered around it, watching intently. Om elbowed aside a minor goddess of plenty. There were dice floating just above the world, and a mess of little clay figures and gaming counters. Several dozen gods were watching the beach. It seemed simpler when you were up here, Om thought. It was all a game. We're like eagles up here. Sometimes we show a tortoise how to fly. Then we let go. He said to the occult world in general,
There's people going to die down there.
At Sortian God of the Sun, didn't even bother to look round.
That's what they're for.
In his hand, he was holding a dice box that looked very much like a human skull with rubies in the eye sockets. Om turned to the little goddess of plenty.
What's this, love? Can I have a look? Thanks.
He emptied some of the fruit out. Then he tapped the solar god on the shoulder.
Hey, sunshine!
When the god looked around, Om broke the cornucopia over his head. It wasn't a normal thunderclap. It stuttered like the shyness of supernovas, great ripping billows of sound that tore up the sky. Sand fountained up and whirled across the recumbent bodies lying face down on the beach. Lightning stabbed down, and sympathetic fire leapt from spear tip and sword point. Simony looked up at the booming darkness.
What the hell's happening?
He nudged the body next to him. It was Argavisti. They stared at one another. More thunder smashed across the sky.
We're dead if we stay here. Come on!
They staggered through the spray and sand and crawled into the calm under the turtle. Other people had already had the same idea. Shadowy figures sat or sprawled in the darkness.
The gods are angry, said Bavorius.
Bloody furious, said Argavisti.
There was a shower of grapes outside. Then a piece of cornucopia shrapnel bounced off the roof of the turtle, which rocked on its spiked wheels.
But why be angry with us? Said Argavisti. We're doing what they want.
Bavorius tried to smile.
Gods, eh? Can't live with them. Can't live without them.
Someone nudged Simony and passed him a soggy cigarette. He took a puff and passed it along to the next hunched figure.
Thank you.
Bavorius produced a flask from somewhere.
Pass it round.
Thank you.
The turtle rocked to a thunderbolt. Someone tapped Simony on the shoulder, creating a strange tingling sensation.
Thank you. I have to go.
Simony was aware of the rush of air, a sudden breath in the universe. He looked around in time to see a wave lift a ship out of the water and smash it against the dunes. A distant scream coloured the wind.
There were people under there, said Argovisti.
Simony dropped the flask. Come on. And no one, as they hauled on timbers in the teeth of the gale, as they used their helmets under the wreckage, asked who it was they were digging for or what kind of uniform they'd been wearing. Fog rolled in on the wind, hot and flashing with electricity, and still the sea pounded down. Simony hauled on a spar, and then someone grasped the other end. He looked up into Brutha's eyes. They pulled aside some planking. There was a man there, armour and leathers so stained as to be unrecognisable, but alive. Then a couple of dice dropped onto the sand. They sparkled and crackled for a while and evaporated. The sea calmed. The fog went ragged and curled into nothingness. The sun was visible again. Once again, there was the sensation of the universe drawing breath. The gods appeared, transparent and shimmering in and out of focus. The sun glinted off a hint of golden curls and wings and lyres. Om was in the throng, standing right behind the Sortian god of thunder. It was noticeable, if only to Baratha, that the thunder god's right arm disappeared up behind his back in a way that suggested someone was twisting it. When the gods spoke, they spoke in unison. What they said was heard by each combatant in his own language. It boiled down to,
One, this is not a game. Two, here and now, you are alive.
And then it was over. You'd make a good bishop, said Baratha.
Me? Said Didactylus. I'm a philosopher.
Good. You can think up a better way of ruling the country. They were sitting in the Cenobiarch's garden. Far overhead, an eagle circled, looking for anything that wasn't a tortoise.
I like the idea of democracy. You have to have someone everyone distrusts. That way, everyone's happy.
And what are you going to do?
I've got to copy out the library.
But you can't read and write.
No, but I can see and draw.
Two copies, one to keep here. He looked out at the shimmering line of the desert. Funny. He'd been as happy as he'd ever been. In the desert. No one, not even Baratha, noticed that old Lutze wasn't around anymore. In fact, he'd packed his broom and his bonsai mountains and had gone by secret tunnels to the hidden valley in the central peaks. The abbot was playing chess in the long gallery.
All went well, he said without looking up.
Very well, Lord. I had to nudge things a little, though. The abbot looked up. The books say that Baratha died and there was a century of terrible warfare. You know my eyesight isn't what it was, Lutze.
Well, it's not entirely like that now. Just so long as it all turns out all right in the end.
Yes, Lord.
There are a few weeks before your next assignment. Why don't you have a little rest?
Thank you, Lord.
As Lutze left, the abbot glanced up at his opponent.
Good man, that. Your move.
The opponent looked long and hard at the board.
Remind me again how the little horse-shaped ones move.
Eventually, Baratha died, in unusual circumstances. He had reached a great age, but this was not unusual in the church. He rose at dawn and wandered over to the window. He liked to watch the sunrise. The sun shone off the copper dome of the library. It was the biggest non-magical library in the world, and people came from everywhere to visit. Baratha made a mental note to inquire about the progress of the new wing. There were too many complaints about overcrowding these days. It was while he was eating his breakfast that the subdeacon, whose job it was to read him his appointments for the day and tactfully make sure he wasn't wearing his underpants on the outside, shyly offered him congratulations.
100 years since you walked in the desert, sir.
Really?
Can't be more than 60 years, boy.
100, Lord. We had a look in the records.
Really? 100 years?
100 years' time?
Baratha laid down his spoon very carefully and stared at the wall opposite him. The subdeacon found himself turning to see what the cenobiarch was looking at, but there was only the whiteness of the wall.
Good Lord! I forgot.
He laughed.
I forgot. 100 years, eh? But here and now we...
Cenobiarch? The subdeacon stepped closer, the blood draining from his face.
Lord!
He turned and ran for help. Baratha's body toppled forward almost gracefully, smacking into the table. His bowl overturned, and gruel dropped down onto the floor. And then Baratha stood up, without a second glance at his corpse.
I wasn't expecting you.
Death stopped leaning against the wall.
How fortunate you were.
Baratha followed the gaunt figure through the wall where there was black sand. The light was brilliant, crystalline, in a black sky filled with stars.
And what is at the end of the desert? Judgment.
Baratha considered this. Which end? Death grinned and stepped aside. A hunched figure sat clutching its knees. It looked paralysed with fear. He stared.
Vorbis?
He looked at Death.
But Vorbis died 100 years ago. Yes. He had to walk it all alone. All alone with himself. If he dared.
The black-on-black eyes stared imploringly at Baratha, who reached out without thinking, and then hesitated.
He was a murderer, a torturer, cruel, callous, compassionless.
Yes, he's Vorbis, he sighed.
But I'm me.
Vorbis stood up uncertainly and followed Baratha across the desert. Death watched them walk away.